Just a reminder, today's conference is being recorded.
So we're back now. Thank you, everybody. Again, this is Betsy Lapointeven. I'm with the Nature Conservancy here in the St. Louis, Missouri office. And we have Randy Arndt joining us. He's going to be leading the conversation. Well, he's going to be telling us about the Grand River Grasslands. Randy is the Grand River Grasslands Site Manager. This region consists of a 70,000-acre grassland landscape that straddles the Missouri-Iowa border. The Conservancy's 4,000-acre Dunn Ranch anchors the Prairie Restoration Site. As Site Manager, Arndt develops and implements conservation activities within the Grand River Grasslands, where the Conservancy works closely with private ranchers, the Missouri Department of Conservation, Iowa Department of Natural Resources, and other partners to restore a functional tall grass prairie. Arndt is a seasoned certified wildlife biologist offering 28 years of experience in public and private land management. He received a Bachelor of Science in Natural Resources and a Master of Science in Wildlife Management from Ohio State University. He worked for the Missouri Department of Conservation for almost 30 years, overseeing land development and restoration efforts across the state. Randy is the recipient of numerous awards for achievement in conservation and wildlife management, including the Conservancy's Prairie Conservation Award. His expertise is essential to this complicated restoration effort in developing a functional, sustainable prairie landscape in the Grand River Grasslands area. So Randy, welcome, and tell us about the Grand River Grasslands. Like, where is it? What do we hope to accomplish, and how?
Okay, I'd be glad to. First of all, the Grand River Grasslands is a 70,000-acre landscape that straddles the Iowa and Missouri border. It's located in southern Ringgold County, Iowa, and northern Harrison County, Missouri, just west of Interstate 35. It's located in the Central Tallgrass Prairie Ecoregion, which spans six states in the Midwest. Those states are Missouri, Iowa, Kansas, Nebraska, Illinois, and Indiana. Land survey maps from the 1840s indicate that approximately 95% of this landscape, which is now the Grand River Grassland, existed historically as open rolling prairie. The remainder of that area was described in those field notes as being scattered timber, or what we know today as savanna. Today, that land cover is 84% grass, 10% crop, and 4% timber. So basically, not much has changed in the makeup of that landscape in the way, you know, in the amount of grass and other types of habitat. Basically, 10% of the grass has been converted to row crop. However, a lot has changed in the makeup of the grasslands itself, in that most of the native grasses have been replaced by non-native and, in some cases, invasive cool season grasses. Currently, we own or protect, us and our partners, about 12,000 acres in the Grand River grasslands. On the Iowa side, the Iowa DNR owns about 5,000 acres made up of two conservation areas that they own and manage, and TNC owns about 200 acres on the Iowa side. In Missouri, the Missouri Department of Conservation within the Grand River Grasslands owns about 500 acres, which is their Pawnee Prairie Conservation Area, and the Nature Conservancy either owns or protects about 6,000 acres, and that includes our Pawnee Prairie, which is about 500 acres, and is anchored by the Dunn Ranch Preserve, which is about 3,800 acres. Our vision for the Grand River Grasslands is really to restore a functional deep soil tallgrass prairie ecosystem, along with all the ecological processes such as fire and grazing by large ungulates that were associated with the prairie historically, and thereby providing critical habitat for a wide range of grassland species, both plant and animal. To meet this vision, we can't do it by ourselves, so we're partnering with other organizations such as the Missouri Department of Conservation, the Natural Resources Conservation Service, the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Pheasants Forever, as well as a number of private landowners, in an effort to implement a variety of restoration strategies, including prescribed fire, conservation grazing, harvest and planting of local native seeds, tree removal, and invasive species control. And the reason we're implementing these strategies is in an effort to mimic the prairie's historic processes and cycles, and hopefully restore a semblance of the original habitat that once existed in the native prairies in order to benefit a flock of remnant flock of prairie chickens that we have, as well as all the other grassland species that are associated with the tallgrass prairie.
Hey, Randy, I hate to interrupt, but I just keep having a quick question in my mind, like, what would a person expect to see when they walk out and look at a tallgrass prairie? Like, what would the ideal tallgrass prairie?
The tallgrass prairie, it's a very complex system. Basically, it's a treeless landscape.
Mm-hmm.
It's dominated by tall grasses, what we call the C4 grasses, which would be big blue stem, Indian grass, switchgrass, but also some of the shorter grasses that are found in the short grass prairie, such as little blue stem, side oats grama, and just a myriad of other species of wildflowers. It's always impressed me how the prairie can change through the season, and you really have to go back every week or two to really appreciate what the prairie has to offer. You go in the spring, and with the lousewort and the other flowers, it'll be carpeted with yellow. And then you go in the summer, and it's switched over to some of the purples and those shades of colors, where you have the liatrices and the pale purple coneflower. And then on into the fall, it turns to yellow again with the asters and that type of thing. And what's really impressive about the prairie, you can go in the middle of the winter, and it's one of the most beautiful times to see the prairie, in that it's this beautiful russet red, and with the grass waving in the wind, and it's just beautiful to see. So it's basically a treeless, complex landscape.
Okay. Well, that helps me visualize while you're talking about all these great restoration efforts and
okay.
The targets that you're talking about.
All right, speaking of targets, our conservation targets, which is basically those things that we're concentrating our efforts on at within the Grand River Grasslands, is number one, the tallgrass prairie restoration, and that's where we spend most of our efforts. Also, that fits right in with that is upland grassland birds, because whatever we do to improve the prairie generally will improve habitat for the associated grassland birds. Also, one of our targets is prairie-associated woodlands, or in other words, the savannas. And as I said earlier, historically, this was mostly a grassland landscape, but it filtered into or faded into these small woodlands in the drainages. And these were open woodlands with prairie vegetation underneath. And so we're trying to recreate that. Most of the woodlands that exist there today have those large trees that were once there, but they've now grown up underneath with a lot of what I call weedy trees, oaks, or some of the other oaks, hickories, elms, that type of thing. So it's shaded out all the understory plants. So we're trying to restore that openness to the woodlands. Another target is the prairie headwater streams. And that also includes the federally endangered Topeka Shiner. We're lucky enough to have the headwaters of the West Fork of Big Creek, which originates within the Grand River Grasslands, and we're trying to improve the riparian corridor along that stream and create shaded pools so that we can eventually reintroduce the Topeka Shiner into that watershed.
Is it like a little fish? That...
Yeah.
Okay.
Most people would recognize it as a minnow.
So about an inch and a half?
Yeah, it's just a small fish, but it's an indicator of the quality of the water in the watershed. And so that's one of the important things. If we feel if we can sustain a population of Topeka Shiners, then that means what we're doing on the prairie is also helping the headwater streams and the water quality. We realize, again, we can't meet these conservation goals on just the land that we own or protect. We only own about 12,000 acres or protect 12,000 acres out of the 70,000 acres. So we realize that in order to meet these goals, we have to move off of the land that we control, and therefore we're focusing a considerable amount of time and resources towards private lands. And in that, to that end, we have a private land specialist located at Dunn Ranch, Kendra Orban. And Kendra works with private landowners to implement conservation-friendly practices on their properties, mainly through government incentive programs, such as the Conservation Reserve Program or the Wildlife Habitat Incentive Program or the Environmental Quality Incentive Program. And these are programs that are funded through the Farm Service Agency. And Kendra just tries to facilitate these landowners in using those programs to do conservation work on their property. That benefits the grassland. We also have a private lands initiative, which is unique to the Grand River grasslands. And this initiative provides monetary incentive for landowners to implement and demonstrate conservation-friendly grazing systems that are also economically sound to the landowner.
Can you, I just don't know very much about grazing and things like that. What would be an unfriendly versus a friendly?
Okay, that's a good question. What I would consider unfriendly grazing to be and what typically happens in the Grand River grasslands is season-long grazing. The cattleman will put his livestock on the pasture and they'll remain there year-round, and the grass, therefore, never really gets more than 6 inches tall. A lot of times it's eaten right into the ground, and therefore doesn't provide any nesting habitat or escape cover or anything for grassland birds. And a more friendly conservation practice, what we're trying to encourage, would be rotational grazing, where and the use of warm season grasses in the rotation, where the livestock person would put his cattle on in the spring on his cool season grasses, which would be fescue and brome grass. He would graze that until the middle of June, and then he would turn them into another pasture, which would be made up of the prairie warm season grasses. They would remain there from June through August, and while they were on that pasture, he would be resting the cool season pasture, which would then allow it to grow and provide structure for nesting and brood rearing and other things like that for grassland birds. So it's mainly a reduction in the stocking rate and the use of a more rotation in the grazing system that would make it conservation friendly.
Thank you. That's interesting.
Okay.
We are, well, I guess one thing that I also am curious about is why are we protecting the Grand River grasslands? I mean, what has made it a priority for the Nature Conservancy?
That's a good question. For one thing, grasslands are critically imperiled globally. In fact, temperate grasslands occupy the smallest amount of land area and are the least protected of all the major habitat types globally. Less than 5% of the temperate grasslands globally are effectively conserved. In North America, less than 4% of the original tall grass prairie still remains throughout the North America. In Missouri, historically, roughly a third of Missouri was in prairie when European settlers came. Today, less than 1% of those original prairies remain. So anything that we can do to restore or protect the remaining prairies that we do have is very critical for many reasons, not only for the grassland birds and whatever, but just for the sense of having the prairie available to enjoy. And why specifically the Grand River Grasslands? Well, before the Grand River Grasslands was designated as a conservation opportunity area by the Missouri Department of Conservation and the Nature Conservancy, the Nature Conservancy did an ecoregional assessment of the central tallgrass prairie ecoregion, and that assessment determined, or through that assessment, they determined that the Grand River Grasslands was the best place in the entire tallgrass prairie ecoregion to restore a functional tallgrass prairie. In other words, if we were going to spend our money and our time and our effort to restore a functional tallgrass prairie, this 70,000-acre landscape is where we wanted to be doing business. There's 1,000 acres of unplowed prairie at the Dunn Ranch that we consider to be our core area from which we hope to expand the prairie through our restoration efforts onto the the surrounding properties. So that's basically why we're there.
And how is that progressing? Is it coming? I mean, how many acres do we already have restored, and what does it look like we're doing?
We're making great strides, really. I'll talk briefly about each of our targets and how we're progressing along those lines. First of all, in terms of the prairie restoration, we've made improvements to all 6,000 acres that we own or protect in Missouri. And we've done that by introducing fire to all those acres. Prairie evolved with the fire. It improves the diversity of the fire. So just by introducing fire back into the system, we've improved the prairie. Another way we've benefited, or some of the efforts we're making, is by the end of June, we will have cleared more than 1,000 acres on Dunn Ranch and Pawnee Prairie of trees. The problem being there is that, you know, why are you cutting the trees? Well, the trees tend to fragment the prairie. They cut it up into small pieces. Most of the grassland birds require an expanse of prairie before they'll use them. And by having these fence lines and tree rows throughout the prairie, that fragmentation is detrimental to grassland birds and other grassland species as well. So that's one reason we're clearing the trees. To date, we've reseeded more than 1,000 acres with a diverse prairie mix. In 2007, we were able to harvest and clean about 9,000 pounds of diverse prairie seed, and we used that to seed 425 acres. In 2008, we harvested and cleaned 11,000 pounds, and we used that to seed 480 acres. In 2009, this winter, we plan to seed another 560 acres. And all this was made possible by a generous gift that was given to us, which allowed us to acquire a large combine and adapt it to be able to harvest these native prairie plants and seeds in an efficient manner. Without it, we wouldn't have been able to even come close to doing what we've been able to do.
So is this like a corn combine? I mean, that's the only kind of, what kind of modifications? Just curious.
Okay, well, it's a large combine that a farmer would use for corn or soybean, same thing. What we had to do is adapt it to the harvest of prairie seeds. Prairie seeds are very light. Some of them just a small puff of wind and the seed blows away. Well, when this grain goes through a combine, normally they put a lot of air on it because they want to blow all the chaff out, so you got clean corn and soybean.
Oh.
So we had to put a different fan system in the combine. And the other thing is we have a special harvesting head that we put on the combine. Instead of a corn picker or the bean sickle and reel, we have, it's really a head that's used for harvesting rice.
Absolutely.
And it's called a stripper head. And it has these fingers that turn real fast and just strip the seed off of the plant. And you can really, the only way you can tell that you've harvested the seed is you see the tracks of the combine. It doesn't cut the vegetation. So that allows the vegetation to remain for, you know, habitat for nesting and brood rearing and that type of thing. But the neat thing is we're partnering with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, who had that particular head at their Neil Smith Wildlife Refuge, no longer needed it, so gave it to us with a 5-year cooperative agreement to allow us to use it with the combine that we were able to purchase with the gift. So the two came together real well, and it's really, you know, allowing us to move forward in our restoration efforts. Concerning the prairie woodland target, Kendra, our private land specialist, and MDC's private land specialist, Kendall Coleman, have been working with several landowners to improve the savannas on their properties. And this is really the first that we've seen those type of efforts being made on private land, and that's through the efforts of Kendra and Kendall to get that done. Our grassland bird target, it is progressing right along with our grass restoration efforts, because basically what we do for the grass, when we restore the grass to a diverse prairie, we're improving it manyfold for a large number of grassland bird species that use that habitat. A lot of our grassland birds, dick thistles, the bobolinks, the bobolinks are thick there this week. A lot of those birds seem to be increasing. However, unfortunately, we're disappointed that in the last year our prairie chickens have not fared very well. And if we have time later, I'd like to talk about that. Our prairie headwater stream target, the advances we've made there, we've installed in-stream habitat that involves basically some rock riffles that we put in the stream, which provides pools of water, and then by restoring the grasses along the stream, that provides shade, which cools the water and provides real good habitat for the Topeka shiner. The Topeka shiner no longer exists there. However, we've got plans in place to reintroduce the Topeka shiner in the near future, and we're cooperating with the Missouri Department of Conservation to do that.
Well, that sounds great. I mean, I have several questions, but and I'm looking at an email, but you're going to cover that anyway. We have a question that was sent asking about the prairie chickens and what you think the decline is due to.
Sure. Yeah, I've got my idea of what is going on, and I have no, you know, scientific data, but through my years of experience, this would be my best guess of what's happened. Two winters ago, the winter of 07, we had 120 days of continuous snow and ice cover at the Dunn Ranch. We'd get 4 inches of snow, then we'd get a freezing rain, and although that in itself did not really, most of the birds I feel probably could make it through that, but what it does, it stresses the birds and put them in a condition that when they go into the reproductive season, clutch sizes would tend to be lower, that type of thing. So that was the first thing that happened. Now that winter then was followed by the wettest spring a year ago this spring, the wettest spring on record at Harrison County. And during May and June, we had as many as 4 rain events of up to 4 to 6 inches of rain that came in just downpours. And this was isolated right along the Missouri-Iowa line. And so we were getting these rains at Dunn Ranch, and then 20 miles to the north at the Kellerton Conservation Area in Iowa, where there are also prairie chickens, they didn't get it. And this year, their prairie chickens are the highest they've been. So they didn't get these rain events that we got. But after those rains, you would go out on the landscape, and the ground was just squishy. There was sheet water everywhere on the sides of the hills. It washed the road out three times. It was just, you could not find a dry place. Well, unfortunately, those occurred right during the nesting season. And a small chick, when it gets wet, it's basically dead because it has no way to, hypothermia, they just die if they get wet. So I think what happened, we just did not get any reproduction. And some of that was substantiated by the fact that the Missouri Department of Conservation had radio collared 21 of our birds in February of 08. And so we followed those into the spring. And although those birds, the hens that were collared, four of them, we had radio collared, they all nested, they all laid eggs. However, they all hatched, but none of them had any chicks that survived. And that was due to those rain events. So I think that's, we just didn't have any reproduction. And then the other thing that the telemetry showed us that of those 21 birds that we radio collared today, one of them is alive. In a year and a half, we had 80% mortality of these birds, which is not uncommon in game birds or in birds like that. Pheasants, quail, prairie chickens all have high rates of mortality, but they also, that's combined with high rates of reproduction. You know, they lay 14 to 17 eggs. And as long as you have reproduction, you can withstand those types of mortalities. However, when you don't have reproduction, and you're starting with a small number of birds to begin with, every bird that you lose is just critical. So where we're at now, the lack of reproduction, the normal high rate of mortality, we're down to this year. We saw, started with 5 birds on our lek, and we ended the booming season with only 2 birds attending the lek. The sad part of this is last Thursday, we got another 4-inch rain at Dunn Ranch, followed by temperatures that night down to 40 degrees. It's the nesting season again, so any birds that were attempting to nest, you know, had a rough go of it again. So we're real concerned about the birds, and hopefully if we can open this corridor between the Dunn Ranch and Kellerton area in Iowa, but with this prairie restoration, we'll get birds moving back and forth between populations, and we can repopulate our flock with some of the birds for Iowa. That's where they came from originally, anyhow. Mm-hmm. So that's my best guess, what's going on.
That's a sad story, but it's good that it seems like you have some answers and even a potential solution. And I can't believe that it's already 12:45 by my clock. I think this has just been a great conversation, and just want to let anybody who is on the line, if they want to go ahead and email us, if something strikes them later, please feel free to email the Missouri events at tnc.org, and we'll get back to you. Probably Randy himself will. Thank you very much, Randy. I mean, this has just been great. And Randy's been right here in our office. Sometimes we don't have that opportunity, but I'm glad to have you here. Our next Scientist Showcase will be August 20th. We're still working on our speaker. If any of you listeners are interested in a particular topic, please don't hesitate to give me an email. I have a few people that I'm waiting to hear back from. But we will definitely send out more information. And I guess that's all. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.